Renewable Kerry on Kerry Today. Brought to you in association with Renewable Energy Ireland. Energy powered by nature.
Yes, indeed, Renewable Kerry back again for this week. And we're going to be talking about another aspect of renewable energy in this country. And this time it is offshore wind and where things stand now and in the near term in terms of offshore. We'll be looking at this over 2 weeks on the programme because there's a lot to get to on it. The technology, where it's located, whether it's in shallower waters off our coast or deeper waters further out to sea where there will be more energy in terms of the winds that blow. With me on the line to talk about this week is Brian Fitzgerald, Captain Brian Fitzgerald, who works at the Department of Climate, Energy and the Environment as the Community Liaison Officer with the National Designated Maritime Area Plan. Brian was previously a ship's captain and operational commander in our Naval Service and is a lecturer in maritime law. Brian, good morning to you and thanks for taking time to talk to us this morning.
No, it's all delighted to be here. Thank you.
Of course, the first thing you could explain is you know, can you explain offshore wind energy and how it differs from onshore?
I certainly hope so. Offshore wind is reasonably easy to understand. I think the best way of thinking about it is just think of onshore. I think every Irish person is familiar with onshore wind. There are those wind turbines standing on the hills and lands around Ireland that we've all become familiar with. So imagine taking one of those turbines and placing it in the sea. And therefore, logically, you have to think, well, there's only really two ways to place something like that in the sea. One is to go down through the sea and drill it into the seabed, or the alternative would be to float one out there, anchor it and tether it to the seabed like an old lightship. The technology is not new, centuries old, in fact. Taking something to sea and anchoring it because perhaps the waters are too deep. And when you anchor it, then you have a platform, and on top of that platform, you put a wind turbine, no different than what you're seeing on the land. The key difference, I think we might go on to talk about this, the key difference between wind at sea and wind on the land is that there's less drag at sea. You don't have the undulating hills and mountains and trees and buildings that disrupt airflow when you're at sea. You have a smoother wind, and therefore you get considerably higher quantities of wind at sea.
Okay, all right, so it skips along the top of the ocean and nothing in its way, so more power behind it and more energy to tap into. Where does Ireland plan to build the first of its John Furr wind farms? I take it it's off the east coast rather than the rougher west coast.
Yeah, well, then just logically take what we have spoken about thus far and say, okay, if you're going to put this technology at sea, then naturally you'd start with two criteria. One, where the water is at its most shallow, so that if you're going to use what's called the fixed bottom technology, inserting a pole through the water and into the seabed, just like a telephone pole, if you're going to do that, then the shallower the water, the better. So you'd identify where has Ireland got its shallow water. The second criteria, also obvious, is where is the water at its most calm, in order that you can do this construction work. Where is it the easiest? And therefore, the Irish Sea, in many ways, and at times like a lake, although I have taken the ship up and down there a few times myself, and far from a lake it can be, but when compared to the other coasts of Ireland, the calmest and shallowest water exists in the Irish Sea. And then actually that shallow water extends out around the Wexford coast and reaches a little bit across Waterford towards Cork. And from those, that area is also shallow, so therefore you would likely go there second, which is what actually the policies have done. So they're the locations. However, I do want to emphasize this. As an island and as an island nation, and I've written many times and lament the fact that not all Irish people describe themselves as islanders, which is the single most important factor about being Irish, is that we are islanders. It is very clear that Ireland possesses extraordinary amounts of wind. In fact, we put a name on it on the West Coast and called it the Wild Atlantic Way. And therefore, all coasts of Ireland are suited to offshore wind technology and offshore renewable energy. It's just a case of sequencing when and where we do it.
Okay, so with that in mind, Brian, Wexford Waterfront, you talked there, the conditions are right, the shallowness of the water, closer to shore, calmer waters as well. What's happening with that now, and what can people expect next when it comes to it, in terms of seeing this development happen?
Yes, of course. So let's start at the beginning. In response to climate action, Ireland declared very substantial, albeit I would suggest about 50% of our potential, but substantial climate action targets nonetheless. So those climate action targets really surround having 20 gigawatts of offshore renewable energy by 2040, and 37 gigawatts by 2050. So that's over a 24-year period from now. That is a significant climate action target. And it drew great interest to Ireland from offshore renewable energy developers, because this is also a very expensive undertaking in terms of the development costs, but necessary in terms of climate action. When they were drawn in such numbers to Ireland, the government decided we needed to harness this massive amount of activity coming towards Ireland, because the wind resource is there, the shallow water is there, and decided to come up with a designated maritime area plan approach, which is a state-led or plan-led approach. In other words, the state will decide the locations, and then the developers can bid in an auction to try and win the contract to actually build the wind farm in those locations. So we will see that right now you have a number of developers, five of them in fact, who are on the books for, in many cases, up to 20 years, and they remain a developer-led approach known as the phase ones. They are at planning right now. They are in the planning process, and they are likely to hear results from the planning process within the calendar year 2026, and that can allow them then to commence development, leading to construction over the following, I would say, 2 years. It's unlikely, and this is only in the Irish Sea at the moment, because those ones are well ahead. It's unlikely that we will see turbine spinning, we'll say, and electricity coming ashore before the early 2030s, maybe 2032.
Okay, then, so that's where we're looking, 6 years, yeah.
We are from now. Now, that's all subject to, this is why I can't be certain on that. It's all subject to the planning process. And I think we all know that planning is very detailed in Ireland, and every member of the public gets their chance to involve themselves in the planning process in Ireland in order that we get it right.
Okay, so they have a right to say, a right to object and all of that, and it goes through a normal course. How do we get the energy back onshore, Brian? Yep. Is it through undersea cables, and do you have to have a terminal or a power station along the coast, let's say, of Wexford or Waterford, for example, in this instance?
This is a very good question. So the power in Ireland, the operator of such power and such cables in Ireland is Airgrid. So we often talk about it, the electricity grid. So the grid has to be able to take this electricity when it comes ashore. Now, when it comes to the Phase 1 project, I don't want to confuse your listeners too much. The Phase 1 projects must bring the cable to the shore themselves. They're the projects, the five projects that currently in planning in the Irish Sea. But when it comes to the state-led, the plan-led projects, Airgrid themselves put to sea and build an offshore substation adjacent to the wind farm, and they run the cable ashore, and that cable goes directly into the grid. So that is how the electricity will come ashore, quite rightly as you pointed out, through subsea cables that will connect to the Irish grid.
Okay, so that's how it happens. How can we benefit from offshore wind energy?
Well, first of all, morally and ethically, when it comes to climate action, we benefit by weaning ourselves off fossil fuels. Yeah. I think your listeners would benefit from realizing or just understanding the amount of fossil fuels Ireland imports just to keep the lights on every day. We are so dependent on fossil fuels. We are importing oil and gas to this country at a rate greater than €1 million per hour. That is what Ireland needs to keep the lights on. We can't sustain that, most particularly in terms of climate action. So therefore, it's a double whammy. We get to take positive action on climate action by harnessing the incredible renewable energy resource. In fact, countries worldwide are jealous of the resource, the natural resource that Ireland possesses in terms of wind. But something that most Irish people don't know, even though we did all touch on it in primary school education and anybody who studied geography, is we have this incredible wealth, natural wealth, in the form of a continental shelf. In other words, Ireland has an abundance of shallow water that extends in many cases out to 200 miles, the extent of our exclusive economic zone, and indeed onto our continental shelf. Other countries do not have such thing. Even inside the Mediterranean, there's very little of it. Portugal do not have a continental shelf. There's none in the Bay of Biscay, north coast of Spain, west coast of France, south of La Rochelle. So we are really sitting pretty when it comes to the strength of our wind and the shallowness of our water for Ireland to make this probably the biggest industry this country has ever seen. And we will do two positive things there. We will deliver climate action. Three positive things: deliver climate action, wean ourselves off fossil fuels, which we don't grow naturally. Fossil fuels originate in the Middle and Far East, maybe Russia, maybe the Gulf, and look at what is happening there now. Yeah. Renewable energy in the form of wind originates in the middle of the North Atlantic, and we're sitting at the front of that pipeline and not at the end when it comes to fossil fuels. And yeah, the last thing I'll say is the socioeconomic potential impact of this for this country, particularly coastal communities.
Okay, Brian, is there any way of becoming self-sufficient energy-wise with onshore wind farms, or will it be part of a mix that's there?
Yeah, I think that this is a very important question. I think the direct answer to that question is it's going to be part of a mix with today's technology. But look at where the technology is going. There is the derivative of offshore wind, which could be to make hydrogen. And hydrogen in the form of a mix could perhaps be fed into our gas grid or used derivatives of hydrogen for other purposes. Then there's battery storage. And the extent of technological development in battery storage is incredible. In fact, in terms of renewable energy, I think everybody's starting to realize this now. Certainly when I was growing up, nobody ever imagined that a solar power would be relevant to Ireland. But in fact, solar power also is an interesting technological development that indicates that the thinking and the advancement that's going on here means that Ireland can capture a lot of renewable energy from solar power. But back to wind, the one thing that we do possess in abundance is wind. And with the shallow water, Ireland is best placed to exploit this.
We should be making the most of it in terms of our energy mix, have the most of it, use the most of it to bring down the prices, number one, be more energy efficient, number two, security, and then obviously the carbon emission standards as well. All of that. Brian, hugely interesting. Thanks so much for talking to us about it on the programme this morning.
You're very welcome. Thank you, too.
Okay. Great stuff. Captain Brian Fitzgerald there, who works part of Climate, Energy and Environment, Community Liaison Officer with the National Designated Maritime Area Plan.